Olive leaf extract is an extraordinary source of the beneficial polyphenols found in olive oil and in olive plants. And now you can get all the benefits from a supplement, olive leaf extract, available through drhoffman.com. Olive leaf extract, one of my favorite supplements. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to focus on something that I think is of tremendous utility. We often talk about anxiety and depression, and all too often we look for a pharmaceutical quick fix. Many adults are on antidepressant medications. I think the statistic is an alarming 25% of women in America take antidepressant or anti-anxiety drugs. And the statistics, even among kids, we now realize that 1 in 13 kids is taking a psychoactive drug. So in a recent article that I wrote for MindBodyGreen, by the way, that article went through the roof in terms of shares. I think as of last time I checked it, 19,000 shares of that article. So clearly it struck a chord among readers of MindBodyGreen, and it's now posted on our website at drhoffman.com. It's natural treatments of anxiety. What could be a more universal phenomenon than anxiety? And in it, I talk about vitamins and supplements and natural approaches with diet, making sure that your blood sugar is stable and so on and so on. But one of the elements that I touch upon in that article, and it's a very crucial element I have found in working with patients who have anxiety and depression, is CBT. What is CBT? Well, we're going to provide you with an in-depth look at CBT. It stands for Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. And we're going to talk to an outstanding practitioner of that psychological discipline. She is Dr. Julie Ann Kolzett. She is a psychologist in practice in Manhattan, and she has a PhD in the field of psychology, and she is a certified cognitive behavioral therapist. So without further ado, let's introduce our guest, Dr. Julie Kolzett. It's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine, Julie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What is CBT? Explain it to our listeners, because a lot of people think of psychotherapy as kind of a long, drawn-out process. They remember watching The Sopranos, and you know, season after season, Tony Soprano came back to see Dr. Melfi, and he agonized and agonized in long, drawn-out sessions with Dr. Melfi, where there was lots of counter-transference and transference, and he fell in love with his therapist. And season after season, it didn't seem like he was getting very much better.
Right.
It just went on and on.
It went on and on. So cognitive behavioral therapy is a therapeutic approach that uses a combination of both cognitive and behavioral techniques. And when I say cognitive, I mean cognitive therapy, in that it is centered on the idea that people can be taught to think in more effective and beneficial ways. Because we know that people who experience psychological distress tend to make predictable errors in their thinking. And as for the behavioral piece, that works under the premise that human behavior are acquired or learned, and therefore they can be changed or altered. And we know that problematic behaviors stem from and in turn reinforce problematic thought processes. So CBT really places emphasis on a patient's current thinking, and it is considered to be time-limited, unlike some of the other therapeutic modalities. That being said, I have seen some patients in my practice for a few years. Those patients tend to like to have contact in terms of they like to be held accountable for certain behaviors and for goals that they've set in their lives. But I'd say the average patient I see is probably for about 14 sessions.
So behavioral therapy, I mean, it's actually kind of goes back to Pavlov, you know, conditioning behavior. You know, Pavlov's dogs, they were taught to salivate at the sound of a bell. And that seems to be like a powerful way that we can, you know, behavior is very plastic. It's easily modifiable with some simple techniques. Is that part of the basis of CBT?
Correct. The behavioral aspect of cognitive behavioral therapy has stemmed from operant and classical conditioning. So whereas classical conditioning involves pairing a previously neutral stimulus, such as the bell, with an unconditioned stimulus, such as the taste of food, and the operant part of behavioral therapy really involves reward and punishment, and that's either to increase or decrease a behavioral. So it rests on both operant and classical conditioning.
Right. So, like, basically, in a way, like behaving the way that animals behave when they're trained. You know, it's like bad behavior is not reinforced, good behavior is reinforced. And this can be done through a discipline of psychological sort of remodeling your behavior.
Right. And I'd say that it's important for us to also reward ourselves. I was speaking about reward and punishments for behavior that we want to see more of in ourselves. So if we, let's say, go to the gym or eat a healthy dinner, it's important for us to give ourselves a pat on the back and give ourselves praise, because essentially what we're doing is we are reinforcing a behavior that we want to see more of. That's called positive reinforcement. And when we go to learning theory, and when we apply it to working with children, for example, when we have a child and we want to hear that child say, and we get them M&Ms, for example, as a result of hearing them say please or thank you, we generally see the behavior again. So we want to do that for ourselves, even as adults.
But you neither give out M&Ms in your office, nor do you have whips and chains. You're not also a part-time dominatrice in your psychological practice, where you will punish patients when they have. It's not punitive. It's using more subtle techniques of reinforcement.
Right, and I encourage patients to actually reinforce, reward themselves, and give themselves a pat on the back, because we know that praise that comes from the outside world is not as lasting, doesn't stick as much as praise that comes from ourselves or praise that is internally driven. So we really want patients to get in the habit of rewarding themselves for good behaviors. I don't necessarily believe in patients rewarding themselves with M&Ms, for example, especially, let's say, if their goal is weight loss, but they should be rewarding themselves in healthy ways.
Mm-hmm. So if I were to come to you as a patient and I were to sit down and say, well, let me tell you about my life, Dr. Kolzett. My anxiety depression started when I was a child, and my mother was very, very withholding, and my father was a strict authority figure. And then, you know, 15 minutes into the conversation, I start talking about my experience in the first grade. And then I said, would you interrupt me at some point and say, look, that stuff is interesting, but it's not that relevant. Let's get to the here and now, and let's start to modify your behavior. Would you cut to the chase with a patient who is, you know, claiming that they've been irrevocably shaped and molded by their life experiences to date?
Yes, I would, and I would do it in a gentle manner. I think most patients who come to me with the understanding that I do really work from a cognitive behavioral framework. So patients who come to me have either been in analysis or have tried other forms of therapy for a period of time and want something different, want something that is more present focused and that it focuses on their current behaviors and thought processes.
So it's not fair to say, and I've heard this from some of my patients, I say, look, I think you could use some psychological support. What person couldn't, but particularly patients who are in crisis, patients who may be confronting ambivalence about whether they should follow a healthy lifestyle, you know, hard to keep to their commitments about taking vitamins and exercising and eating right. And they say to me, invariably, they say, well, I've tried that. I've been there. I've done that. I've done psychotherapy. It didn't work. So I'm done with that. Does CBT offer a very different paradigm for people who suspect that, you know, it hasn't worked in the past?
Well, I hope so. I think it's hard when a patient comes to you and is that resolute in terms of, not believing that therapy is going to help. I think it's important to educate the patient and to let them know that there are hundreds and hundreds of research studies that support CBT's efficacy in treating a range of difficulties, from depression to anxiety, which you spoke about earlier, smoking cessation, eating disorders, obesity, et cetera. So I would want to let the hypothetical patient know that there is research to support how CBT is an effective means of treatment. And I would want to know specifically, what hadn't worked for them in the past. Perhaps they were at a period in their lives where they were required to work 80 hours a week, or perhaps they had some other circumstances that made it difficult for them to actually do the work, I think, necessary to see therapeutic change. And perhaps it just wasn't a good fit with their last therapist. That, therapeutic rapport really does matter when it comes to affecting change.
Indeed. So you mentioned scientific studies, that this is not just a belief system or a fad, that there actually is hard science that backs up cognitive behavioral therapy. I've read that you can actually see changes after a short course of cognitive behavioral therapy in what are called functional MRIs, which actually look at various areas of the brain. And that just as drugs, they say sometimes when you have to take, where they claim you need to take an antidepressant, they say you have a biochemical imbalance, or your brain chemistry is off, so we're going to fix it with a drug. These studies suggest that just some sessions where really nothing transpires except some talk can actually change the chemistry and function of the brain. Has that been in your finding?
Well, I have heard that, and I did actually some research myself before coming on to your show. I'm not a neuropsychologist. However, digging into some of the research, it seemed that in the past, people did take a more black and white view, if you will, that psychotherapy is a treatment for psychologically based disorders, whereas medication is for biologically based disorders. So
right, it's either in your head, or it's like beyond the talk stage.
Right. So I think now there's a consensus that has changed, and there's an understanding that mental processes come from or derive from mechanisms of the brain. In other words, alterations in our psychological processes are reflected by alterations in the functions or structures of the brains. And, the advent of functional neuroimaging, such as fMRIs and other neuroimaging techniques, has given us some evidence that we can change the brain systems on some level.
And it's such objective evidence. In other words, not just, I think I'm better, maybe it's just a placebo effect, but actually that we've actually changed the fundamental neurochemistry, the way that the brain works through a a process that's essentially a transactional or conversational process.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting, and I think, we will see more neurobiological research giving us additional insight into the specific modes of psychotherapy that can be kind of designed to target specific brain circuits. So we'll have even a more in-depth understanding of the different types of psychotherapies that can affect the change processes on a neurobiological level.
Right, because it's all about evidence-based medicine these days, especially when it comes to cost containment and saving money. They want to know that you're getting bang for your buck. And is there any evidence that CBT ultimately gets patients to their psychological well-being faster than other modalities?
You know, I don't know that for sure, but I do know in terms of antidepressants, I mean, we know that those obviously affect brain chemistry. We're not exactly sure exactly how it works. And again, I'm not a psychopharmacologist here, but CBT is at least on par with changing the neurobiological structures at least to some extent.
Okay. Well, and offers a drug-free alternative, or, you know, obviously some of your patients may receive medication, but all too often, and I think you probably realize this as a psychologist, not a psychiatrist. Psychiatrists these days, many of them don't want to talk. They don't have time to talk because of medical economics. They've got to see a big volume of patients, and they're just happy to, you know, check your prescription, maybe change your prescription, tweak this, tweak that. And then they say, well, fine, you know, go ahead and do some talk therapy. I don't have time to, you know, put you on the couch for 40 minutes, as was done traditionally by psychiatrists. So they end up seeing psychologists.
Yes, and I work pretty closely with psychiatrists. And I'd say that about 50% of the patients I see are taking a psychotropic drug for, I'd say most often, some depression or anxiety. Some of my patients do also struggle with issues of attention, and so they are taking some psychostimulants, like a Concerta, for example.
ADD meds,
Yes, and, you know, some of my patients also have health comorbidities, which is an area of therapy that is kind of my specialty, and that is health psychology.
Okay, yeah, tell us about health psychology, because, I see a lot of patients, they are, when they have a medical condition, they're almost invariably depressed. Now, part of it is, say you're a young person who has MS or ulcerative colitis, I mean, clearly that's depressing. But there's also something about the very biology of being sick that sometimes affects the brain, because it's hard to compartmentalize. If you've got a sick colon or if you've got movement disorder, it's hard to wall that off from the brain itself. There may be physical changes that occur in the brain that make people feel tired and affect their moods.
Yeah, you said it very well, and it's sort of what comes first, the chicken or the egg, and maybe it's both in the case of MS, for example. Health psychology is a subset of clinical psychology that is devoted to understanding the relations among psychological factors, behavior, and physical health and illness. So it's a pretty broad discipline, but it's based on the biopsychosocial perspective, which a person's health is believed to be influenced by an interaction among biological, like genetics, for example, psychological thoughts and behaviors, which we talked about a little bit before, and social factors, family, culture, social support. So it's really kind of a holistic approach in treating the patients. And, you know, when working with a patient with a medical illness, it is very important to speak with their doctors, not just whether they're seeing their medical doctors, not just, let's say, a psychiatrist if they're on any medications, but also their internal medicine practitioner, their cardiologist, et cetera, to really get a more complete picture of the various health problems.
Where I find health psychologists come in handy is when I have a patient who has obstacles to compliance or pursuing a wellness program. Sometimes there's ambivalence. I mean, clearly there is that, you know, when people are confronted with issues of body image, you know, sometimes they really want to get on a stick and get healthy and lose weight. And sometimes they say, oh, screw it. You know, I want to be accepted for who I am. And I'll just eat like a house on fire because I don't care anymore. And as a result of that ambivalence and sort of kind of tortured going back and forth between the straight and narrow, And all out putting on the feed bag, there's a great deal of distress that occurs. And sometimes we're happy that they work with psychologists to kind of resolve those conflicts.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think, unbeknownst to some, psychologists address issues other than mental health. For example, as you mentioned, psychologists teach patients how to take their medication. Maybe their medication makes them nauseous when they take it at a certain time during the day, so they being the psychiatrist, will work on helping the patient take the medication at a time that is most advantageous to them.
Or alternatively, to keep taking their vitamins, in my case.
Okay, yes, and so teaching patients how to lose weight, sleep better, manage side effects of medication, et cetera, it's important, I think, to stress that point, that psychologists really are, behavioral medicine practitioners, in that we promote the connection between the mind and the body. And I work on that level all the time with my patients, and I think that's something my patients appreciate about my practice.
And so what type of patients do you normally see in your practice?
I see a variety of different patients. I would say some of my patients struggle with weight management. Others have a chronic illness, whether it's MS or Parkinson's disease. I see your patient who is stressed out from having a difficult job and working very long hours. I see patients who want to come for problem solving because they're experiencing a problem in their lives, such as having difficulty finding a job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's sort of that's the pace of life in Manhattan these days. Is economic stresses, social stresses, professional stresses, marital stresses, and so on. Clearly,
yes,
that's going on these days.
I'd also say I see some patients who, again, the patient who wants more, stress management work. I do see patients who come to me more or less exclusively for biofeedback, where I teach them to control their body's physiological and biological response to stress. So that is a subset of that's also a patient that I see, somebody who comes to me for biofeedback, meditation, and relaxation.
Well, good. That's a theme that I want to pick up in part two of today's podcast. We're going to pause for a moment, and when we return, we're going to focus on relaxation techniques via high-tech methods such as biofeedback or ancient methods such as meditation and relaxation with today's guest. She's a cognitive behavioral therapist, a psychologist in practice here in Manhattan, Dr. Julianne Kolzett. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.